Welcome to the Modern Mamas Podcast. We're here to provide a safe space for open dialogue, insights, and anecdotes about empowered pregnancy, labor, delivery, parenthood, and everything in between, with zero judgment and open hearts and minds. I'm Jess, a level one CrossFit trainer, a birth fit coach, and a licensed and certified athletic trainer. I have my master's degree in kinesiology, and I am currently studying to be a certified nutrition consultant. I'm the blogger behind Hold the Space Wellness, as well as a mama to two small kiddos.
And I'm Laura, a certified CrossFit trainer, certified nutrition consultant, Birth Fit Santa Cruz regional director, and mama to Evie Wilder. I'm also the woman behind Radical Roots, where you'll find recipes, fitness insights, travel tips, consulting, and more. Please note that while we're here to provide advice and insights, we aren't medical practitioners and always recommend that you check with a trusted provider before implementing any changes. Thanks for joining us. We are so happy you're here. Friends, happy Wednesday or whatever day you're listening to this, if it's not the day it was released. We are here with a very, very, very special guest today, and we cannot wait to introduce her and to dive into some really intense, awesome, but also heavy material today. We're so grateful that she's here to open up and to share her story because we know so many can benefit. But just a quick disclaimer before we even get in, we will be talking about miscarriage today and issues with trying to conceive. And so if that is something that you are not in a place where you're prepared to listen or hear, maybe save this one for later. So just wanted to start right off the bat with that. Before we dive in and introduce our wonderful guest, Jess and I will each just give a couple quick updates because we know you guys love the weekly updates from us. I will start. My big update is that my husband was, I'm gloating with pride because he was recently hired onto the CrossFit Kids seminar staff, and he's worked a couple seminars now and he's just thriving and he's doing amazing work. And the CrossFit Kids seminar specifically is training coaches to work with kids. And I just think it's incredibly magical because he's making an impact, in a way that most trainers can't, in that he gets to, with through the ripple effect, really impact the way kids are moving, which will then go, as we know, we talk a lot about fitness and movement, and moving functionally in our bodies from such a young age is really an incredible way to build health over for longevity and through the long run. And it's great for their headspace and all the things. So he's been traveling a lot, which has been a transition for me, but I now know, and Kirsten, you can probably speak to this too. That's our guest, by the way, that absence makes the heart grow fonder. So he's gone and then he comes home and then I'm like, I'm just falling in love with you all over again. So it's been really cool because he is home so often during the week, to have him gone on the weekends when he is here now. It's really impacted my headspace, to be honest. I don't feel as overwhelmed because I don't feel like I should. I hate that word, but he's working really hard on the weekends. I work really hard during the weeks, and then we have this kind of nice rhythm that we're falling into. So that is my update. I am so proud of that guy and so in love with him. So that's that. What about you, Jess?
Let's see. The only updates I have literally are about yogurt and debt. How, I don't know, how boring an adult is that? My coconut yogurt is coming along for anyone following the saga. We're pretty much going to launch a thriving yogurt business. At least that's my plan to take over the world in 2018. What year is this? Oh my God. So coconut yogurt is coming along. And then, I think I shared on the episode that we'll launch this week that Tim and I have been kind of doing Dave Ramsey with debt. So we have some personal debt and then a lot of school loan debt. And so I'm really, really excited because we are paying off the last of our personal debt and then we get to tackle our student loans, which is huge. So that's pretty much it. Isn't that lame?
No, it's awesome. The little things.
I'm like,
we are just normal humans living awesomely normal lives with a little magic sprinkled in. So,
and I have one other update, and it's not even mine to share, but if you guys haven't been making Laura's, I forget the technical name for it, but the crack sauce.
That's what I called it on the blog.
Make it. It is so good. I literally have a bowl right beside me. Drizzled with the crack sauce. So that's,
I totally credited you. I credited you too with the name of that in the blog post.
Yes.
I put crack sauce all over my rainbow bowl. Those are the names.
Over your rainbow bowl. That's the best.
Yeah.
So it's really good. If you guys haven't been, if you haven't been following along with that saga. Now, didn't you say there's like three variations now?
Yeah, and they're all very, very simple. One of them's, some people can't have sesame, so one of them's cashew butter based.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
Cool. That's it. Yeah. That's what's exciting in my world.
Oh, we'll link to that recipe. I will in the show notes. So if you want to find it, literally two ingredients.
Awesome.
Well, let's dive in, shall we? Let's introduce our incredible guest today.
So I get the pleasure of introducing our guest today. So today we have Kirsten with us. Kirsten, you are Vibrant Wife Army Life on Instagram, correct? Yep.
Vibrant Life Army Wife.
Vibrant Life Army Wife. Yes. On Instagram. Yes. She's amazing. And so I'm here to introduce her today. She is a 20-something self-proclaimed nutrition nerd, nutritional therapy practitioner, and trained doula with a love of real food, natural healing, and all things fertility, pregnancy, and birth-related. She's an army wife currently living in Georgia with her husband and two cute pups. After years of digestive distress, digestive distress, thyroid issues, anxiety, and constant fatigue, Kirsten discovered real food and developed an intense passion to heal her body with real, nutrient-dense food. This passion turned to using real food and a healthy lifestyle to promote fertility and a healthy pregnancy and a baby when she and her husband decided to start trying to grow their family. After two miscarriages, she now has two sweet angel babies and a strong desire to help other women struggling with pregnancy loss and to end the stigma surrounding it. You can follow along with her journey on Instagram and her blog, Vibrant Life Army Wife. So that is Kirsten in a nutshell.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. Thank you for being there. You get to hear her voice now. Hi.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. It means a lot to us. And I know it means a lot to our listeners. We've had a lot of women reach out requesting that we bring someone on to talk about miscarriage because it's something that is so often underspoken about, so often a topic that's avoided. And the reality is that it really impacts a large number of women. And so I'm so grateful for you and what you're putting into the world and the fact that you're breaking the stigma about not being able to speak about this, because it's something that as a female population, so many women go through. And it's something that I feel is really a powerful way for our women to connect and to support each other. And so it's been really incredible watching your journey. I mean, it's been heartbreaking and I know it's been so hard, but also it's been, just to see you, I don't know, grow and share, and it's just magical. So on that note, today's episode is about your experience through your two miscarriages and your journey to conceive and just your story, and we're just so grateful to have you here. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited and nervous and hoping that I can do justice to both my story, my babies, and to everyone else out there who's going through something similar.
Well, you're so eloquent on that. If you guys don't follow Kirsten on Instagram, I highly recommend that you do, no matter where you are in life, what your journey is, because you're very eloquent. Mm-hmm. You're very well spoken, and there's like emotion in there, but also it's just, I love following along with your journey. So thank you for being so open and sharing so much. So for now, question is, if you could only eat one thing every day forever, what would it be?
This is our icebreaker question. I don't think she heard that.
Oh.
One thing forever. Yeah. What would it
question.
Be? Ooh, that's hard. I feel like I want to say chocolate, but I feel like that's so duh. Like, who doesn't want to eat chocolate? I don't know.
Chocolate's a specific brand.
Yeah,
I just got, I think it's called Taza. Is that the one that's honey sweetened?
That's Pure 7.
I just got some of that from Thrive. Is that Pure 7? Come on, I missed that. Okay, that's the one I just got. And it's really, really good.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
We love them.
It's like,
Sorry.
I was going to say, it tastes different. I just dug into my first box. Like, I don't know. It's different than any chocolate I've ever tasted. And it's a different texture, too, almost. So I'm with you on that one.
I think it's because the honey gives it a little bit of a different vibe. But a not chocolate answer, this is probably really random. But I really, really love, like, bacon-braised collard greens. I don't know what it is, but I could eat, like, several heads of collard greens at one time if they're bacon-braised.
Who doesn't
like
bacon?
Do you have a recipe for that?
I think so. I should probably know that. I think I do have one on my blog. I just kind of wing it, to be honest, most of the time, but
I love it.
I was introduced to them the first time we lived in Georgia, like 5 years ago when we first got married, and I've been hooked ever since.
And you lived all over the place. So you, as your Instagram handle says, is you're an army wife, which is,
right.
Which is very cool and unique to very different from my experience. So I'm excited to hear more about that. So I guess we could just segue now into, tell us more about yourself, where you are in life, maybe your story as with your husband and kind of like how you found your passion, and as an NTP and then moving forward into, let's just start there. Like, how'd you find your passion for food? What's your, a little bit about your history? And then we'll dive into more of like the present.
Okay. So I guess like, I always had kind of health issues growing up, like digestive issues. I had really bad acid reflux growing up as a kid, and I actually had what's called a hiatal hernia, which is where your stomach refluxes up into your esophagus, which is incredibly painful. And I had surgery in high school to fix that, and then so I had no more issues with that, but then I had all these like lower digestive issues. Nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. And so in college, I started kind of digging into nutrition and how food can help with like just different health issues and things like that. And so I started eating gluten-free and dairy-free, and that made a difference in my health and how I felt. And it just kind of like snowballed from there. I was actually a political science major in college. So this passion did not change like my direction in school, but it was, at that point it was kind of a little late. It was either I stay in school and change my major and my husband joins the army and moves away and I don't go with him, or I just stick with political science and get married and graduate with him and move with him and figure out what I want to do later in life. So that's what I chose. We actually got married the day before we graduated from college. It was the same day he commissioned with the army. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 5.5 years. And I think it was about 2 years into our marriage that I went back to and did school and did the nutritional therapy practitioner program, and just started my blog, kind of started doing all of that kind of stuff. So we've lived in, we were in Georgia. So we went to school in Washington. That's where we got married. And I'm from California. And then we moved to Georgia when we first got married, and then Texas. And then we moved back to Georgia in the end of 2016. And then just this last August, we moved to a different part of Georgia. So not totally all over the place, but a little bit back and forth.
More than me. I always laugh because my geography of this country is pathetic. If it's not like the West Coast or Texas, maybe some Colorado. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive. I'm curious, based on your bio, have you ever attended a birth as a doula?
Just one. So okay. That's why I say I'm a trained doula, not a certified doula, because I haven't technically finished the process, but I was blessed to be able to attend a friend of mine's birth when I was living in California in 2016, when my husband was in Korea, and it was amazing.
I imagine moving around would be kind of hard to really practice as a doula, because it's hard to build a client base. And plus, if you don't know, if you're 9 months is a long time where you might end up needing to move in that time frame.
Yeah. And I kind of what put that on hold for us too was like we moved and we were like right at that same time that we were moving. We were also, that was when we started trying, and it was like, well, I don't want to be like attending somebody's birth when I'm pregnant. And so there, that was, you know, that whole thing. And
well, it's nice that you have that training maybe someday. You have so much wisdom to offer and experience to offer to mamas. That's so cool.
That's my hope.
Yeah.
Kirsten, I'm curious. So I know being part of like the Army medical, like in that whole, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Realm, are they, would you find clientele on the Army base that would be looking for like doula services? Do you think they're open to that? Or are they a lot more like traditional medical stuff? Not to say that you can't have a doula and do traditional medical like delivery, but.
Right. Absolutely. So I haven't actually like had an experience on like being a doula or have anything with that on like at a military hospital. But I will say that Army hospitals in my experience aren't really that different from like normal hospitals in this country that I've been exposed to, in that like, you know, you'd think it'd be all rigid and like strict, and you have all the, you know, military people who are the doctors and the nurses and stuff. And that's kind of the case in some degree, but there's also a lot of civilians that work at the hospitals, and they're, you know, they have a lot of midwives. And so they are open to some of the more, like, I don't know, alternative. I don't like saying natural versus unnatural. I think all birth is natural, but some of more of those kinds of things. So I don't know specifically. Sorry, my dog is sneezing. I hope you guys can hear that.
I like it.
It's real life.
It is. It's totally real life. And so, yeah, I do think that they would be open to that. I just can't say from personal experience for sure.
We have a friend who, her husband, kind of a very similar story as you. They live in a tiny house, but he's in the army. They've delivered all of their five kids in the tiny house, and he's military. And so she's just like, she's also a doula, very much like yourself, but she's just like, I'm just doing it my way. We're doing it at the tiny house. And like, they bring a birth pool to the tiny house. Don't ask me how they fit it in there, but,
that is awesome.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess there's some flexibility in like whatever you choose to do within that military structure. So,
yeah. And you have options as far as like, there's kind of the main insurance versus the more like you can choose your own doctor insurance, but have to pay a little out of pocket. Mm-hmm. Like you have some options there. And that's one of the things that has changed for me throughout this whole process as I've switched to the one that allows me to choose my own doctor. I don't have to go to the hospital on post for all my care, those kinds of things. So
that was going to be my next question for you is like through your thyroid issues and digestive distress. And now with the miscarriages and trying to conceive, if that's been a struggle at all with, being with the army insurance or
he's army. Yeah.
Army. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. With the insurance that you have. So it sounds like there is some flexibility, and that's good to hear.
Yeah. And so I've had like good experiences and bad experiences with all those things with, military providers. It just depends. Like I never really had a like really wonderful doctor who I was like, oh, I just fully trust this person and they're wonderful. But like, I've had practitioners who will just like do what I ask them to do. So I'm like, I need these. That's actually how I got diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, is I'd already knew I had hypothyroidism. And then I was learning more about it. And I was like, hey, I need you to test my TPO antibodies. And it was actually, I think he was like a nurse practitioner or something like that. And he was like, okay. And turns out positive. So you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And so I've had a lot of, I feel like, is much better than just like, you know, a doctor who's going to be like, nope, like you don't need that, you're fine, kind of thing. So
I love how empowered you are to go in and to like ask the right questions. I mean, right questions. You know what to ask, and you know you've taken like authority over your own health, which I imagine going through the struggles that you've been through has been made the process. I don't know. I can only imagine if you didn't have that empowerment to ask the right questions and to take control of your health, where it could be even more like hopeless, because the doctors are just aren't oftentimes giving answers or, you know, being supportive. And I know you posted a little bit about this. So I guess on that note, let's just dive into, if you're ready to dive into your experiences, if you want to tell the story of Ellis and how, that came about, and, just in whatever capacity you feel comfortable.
Sure. So, I mean, I always like struggle with where do I start the story? So I guess I'll just start kind of at the beginning. So it was December of 2015 was kind of when, you know, we'd been married for 3.5 years at that point. And we always knew, or we kind of always thought we wanted to have kids, but we're always kind of like, one day. Like, we weren't like, okay, at this point, we're going to have kids. And so just randomly, I came back from a trip visiting my parents in California. And I was like, I'm ready. Like, I want to have kids. But I was afraid that, you know, Jared, my husband, was like, going to be like, nah, we're not ready yet. So anyway, so I have this conversation with him, and he was like we're at the exact place where it's like, okay, we're ready to have kids. And so that was like a sign to me that, you know, it was good. It was the right timing. And so the problem was, though, is that, so this was December, he was deploying at the end of January. And so we decided, okay, we'll wait until after he gets back from his deployment, and then we'll start trying. So fast forward to October of the next year, October is 2016. He came back from Korea, and we started trying, and we were fortunate in that it only took us a few months to get pregnant. It was actually January 27th of 2017, so just a little over a year ago, that we found out we were pregnant for the first time. We were very excited, obviously. We went in. I think we had our first appointment at about, I think it was 7 weeks, just shy of 7 weeks. And we heard the heartbeat and everything was great, like super exciting. They tested my thyroid levels and, you know, all that, which were a little bit low. We got my medication. Everything was good. We went back in at 11 weeks, had our second ultrasound, and this was, the first appointment was with an OB. This one was with a midwife, and she was super great. And, you know, we saw the baby, who was looking much less like a little ball and more like an actual little tiny human, which was wonderful. And, again, everything looked great. And she actually told us, you know, oh, you should be out of the woods now, like feel free to tell everybody, that kind of thing. And we'd already told, like our parents and some good friends and stuff like that. But, we didn't end up sharing right away after that. It was on April Fool's Day, ironically, that we shared that we were pregnant. We posted on Facebook at least. And it was like, as soon as I hit the publish button on that Facebook post announcing that we were pregnant, with a cute little picture with my dog, one of my dogs, and these little tiny baby shoes, I like started feeling really, really anxious. Like I just had this horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach, like something was wrong. And I hadn't experienced that up to this point. Like I always knew, like, you know, several women in my family have had miscarriages. Like I knew it was a possibility, you know, just my doula training, all those kinds of things. Like it was always kind of in the back of my head, but I figured at this point, because I would have been 13 and a half weeks at this point when we shared, I figured it would have happened by now if it was going to happen. And so anyway, this was a Saturday, and we had another appointment on Tuesday, actually at maternal fetal medicine with a perinatologist. And like I said, everything had been fine with the ultrasounds and all that kind of stuff. It was just my thyroid levels were a little bit wonky. So they were like a little too low at first and then a little too high when they checked them the second time. And so the OB just wanted to send me to a specialist, like just to make sure everything was okay. So that's why this appointment was at maternal fetal medicine. And so I'm feeling really anxious and I'm just trying to put it out of my mind. I'm like, you know, we'll go to the appointment on Tuesday and, you know, everything will be okay. And then I can stop feeling anxious. And I actually remember, driving to that appointment on Tuesday and like with my hand on my stomach, like talking to the baby, like, I'm so sorry. I'm so stressed out. Like, I just need to see that you're okay. And then I'll be better. I promise. And, so actually with this appointment, this third appointment, it was the first one my husband wasn't able to go with me too. He, this whole time that I was pregnant, he was in a class with the Army that they do for new captains. And on this specific day when my appointment was kind of like, it was almost like a midterm project is how I would describe it. So it was like kind of the culminating event of the whole first half of the class, super important. You know, big part of their, like, you know, it's not like a traditional college kind of grading system, but their grade. And he didn't even have like his phone, like they weren't allowed to have their phones on them, nothing. So anyway, so I go to this appointment and I am by myself and we go in or I go in. And the one thing that still like sticks with me with this appointment is I remember laying down on the table and like lifting my shirt up and rolling my pants down to get the ultrasound, and the ultrasound tech's like, oh, you're so tiny. And it's like, okay, well, I'm 5'8", so I'm not small. And I was only 14 weeks and it was my first baby. And so it didn't really bother me that much at the time, but like now looking back, it bothers me.
I just wish that it wasn't such a thing for anyone to comment about the size of women in general. Right? Like first off,
absolutely.
And second off, it becomes an even bigger thing when you're pregnant. And it's like, okay, well, then it's like, am I too tiny? Is my baby not growing? Am I too big? Is baby sick? It's just, and then it adds this whole other element of stress. And it's just people need to just stop.
Yeah, everybody's different. Everybody grows to different sizes at different times. And 100%. Yeah, just keep your thoughts to yourself.
Yes. Anyways, that just had to enter for that. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so important. So anyway, so she like starts doing the ultrasound and there wasn't that initial like whooshing heartbeat sound that I heard with the first two. And I thought at first, like, it's a different office, it's a different machine. Like, you know, maybe she just hasn't turned the Doppler on. So she's kind of going through doing things, and like, she was very quiet. And that was kind of my first hint that something was wrong. Is she just like, wasn't saying anything as she's going through and doing these measurements. And then she asks me if I'd had any cramping or bleeding. And that's when I knew something was not right. And I had not, I'd had no, like, no cramping, no bleeding, no nothing like that. And then she, you know, told me, you know, I'm so sorry, we can't hear it. There's no heartbeat. So she like kind of shows me on the ultrasound too, with the imaging, like how, you know, like here's your uterus and you can see the color for the, you know, blood, and here's the baby, and there's not that anymore. So she left to get the doctor. And so I'm like sitting in there by myself. I just found out my baby had passed, and like, she's like handed me a box of tissues, and I'm like, I don't even know like how, what, how, it's like, you're just in such shock at that point. Like, I didn't even know what to do. And I was there like, just like laying there with my pants rolled down for like, I don't know, it probably was only like 5 or 10 minutes. It felt like a year. And the doctor came back in and kind of confirmed what she'd already said. And he told me that he had called the hospital on post, because like I said, I was at a maternal fetal medicine clinic, which was not on base. And he wanted me to, he's like, you know, you don't have to go there right away. You can go home and take care of things, you know, talk to whoever you need to talk to, do what you need to do. But I want you to go to the hospital when you can, like sometime later today. And so the ultrasound technician, she gave me a hug. So she made that rude comment, or I guess it wasn't rude. It's rude in hindsight, comment about me being tiny, but she actually was very sweet. She gave me a big hug, and she walked me out the back entrance of the clinic, so I didn't have to go back through the waiting room with all the waiting pregnant women, which was nice. And I got in my car and just like broke down. I'm trying to call my husband like over and over again, even though I know he doesn't have his phone. And finally I was like, okay, well, I have to drive myself like, you know, halfway across town. And so I got to pull my stuff together. So I do, I drove, I still like to this day, like I'm glad now that we don't live where we'd lived then. Cause I like had, I couldn't drive down that road for a really long time. And it was like one of the main roads through town to get anywhere. Because like my brain would just go right back there to that drive. So anyway, I decided that I didn't want to go back home, because if I went back home, I wasn't sure I'd be able to leave again. So I just ended up going straight to the hospital. And and I've been crying while I was driving. And when you go onto base, or anybody who's ever been on a military base, you'll know this, that you have to like show your ID card at the gate. And they're, you know, usually they're kind of nice. Oh, how are you today? And I'm like, a wreck. And then I'm like, oh, I'm good. You know, as I'm like fighting back tears, very ironic. But anyway, so I get to the hospital, and I go to the, just like the women's health, like where the normal appointments and stuff are, which is right next to the, like labor and delivery unit. And, I walk up to the desk and I told her, I was like, I just came from maternal fetal medicine. They said they called you guys, and she's like, oh, like what's going on? And I had to tell her like, I'm having a miscarriage. Like I had to say it out loud, and that was so hard. So she like, you know, they find my file, and she walks me over, to the, labor and delivery area, and they have me in triage. And, I'm so grateful to this day for the doctors and the nurses that were on staff when I was there, because they were so, so wonderful. They were very sensitive to what I was going through. They were very like, they were there with me. Like it wasn't like sometimes when you're in the hospital or the doctor and you know, you see them for like 2 seconds and then they're gone. They were very nice. And I'm very grateful for that. And so anyway, so I was in like triage for a while, and they're like kind of like still doing this like back and forth of, do you want to go home? Do you want to be checked in? Like, and I just didn't know what to do. I wanted my husband is what I wanted, and I couldn't get a hold of him. And so eventually they did put me in a regular room, and they, you know, got me hooked up to an IV, and they started doing loads and loads and loads of blood work, like drawing all my blood, it felt like. I was sitting there for a while, and they were really great about like, we won't move forward with anything until you're ready, until you can get a hold of your husband. Like we can just sit and wait, which again, was really wonderful. And so finally, I talked to the nurse and I asked her if, cause like the hospital has channels to get in charge or get a hold of like my husband's chain of command. And so it like, they finally, I was like, you know, I need him. Like, I know this is important. It is an important thing that he's doing and I don't want to interrupt him, but I need him. And I wish I would have done that hours earlier. I don't know why I waited so long, but so the hospital was able to get a hold of, my husband, and they pulled him out of the classroom that they were in. And, this was probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours after I'd found out that, I finally was like, they got him on the phone with me and he was like, what's happening? And I was like, I'm at the hospital. I need you to come. And he's like, what's going on? And I just like broke down and told him that I had lost the baby. And then he kind of lost it on the phone. And, then that was about like maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes later that he was actually able to meet me at the hospital. And it's still a very like just tender, precious moment that I'll always remember when he first walked into that room. And he just like sat on the bed with me and held me and we both cried together. And so, you know, obviously one of the like probably the worst day of my life, one of the hardest moments of my life, but also just one of those special, precious things I'll always remember. And so anyway, like once he was there, we kind of started moving forward with the process. The doctors came back in and kind of explained what was going to be going on. Because I was, so far along I don't even know if I said this yet. So I was 14 weeks at this point, exactly 14 weeks that day. They thought that, Ellis had died. We didn't know his name was Ellis at this point because we didn't know if he was a boy or a girl yet. They thought he had passed about a week earlier. So he was about 13 weeks, along. And so I was too far along for them to want me to like deliver the baby on my own at home, which is why I was in the hospital. And so the plan was they were going to induce me with Cytotec and then I would deliver the baby there in the hospital. And so, I remember them like that they had brought in an anesthesiologist to explain like an epidural and how that works and all that kind of stuff. And I just remember thinking like, is it really going to be that bad? Like this baby's so tiny, like I don't need an epidural. Like I've had several surgeries in my life. And I was never one to like ask for pain medication. I was like toughed it out. I don't know why, but that was just kind of how I did things. And so I was like, no, I don't need an epidural. And that was like when I had thought about delivering the baby when I was pregnant, I always thought, you know, I would have an unmedicated birth. And so I was like, no, I'm going to have an unmedicated birth now too, was kind of my plan. So anyway, I think it was about 4:00 PM that day, that they did the first round of Cytotec. I didn't really notice anything at first. It took a while for it to kick in, for me to start feeling anything. And it kind of initially just started feeling like period cramps, essentially. So we were just kind of hanging out in the hospital watching. There was a Fixer-Upper marathon on TV, which was kind of great. Although I couldn't watch that show for a while after that. But we did that and played Gin Rummy. That was our things we did to pass the time in the hospital. And, so yeah, like I said, the first round was at 4:00. And then I think it was, maybe about midnight or so, or 10 PM, something like that was when they did the second round. Cause I wasn't progressing really. So then I like tried to sleep, got some sleep in. And I remember waking up at like it was a little bit before 4 AM. And I like needed to go to the bathroom. And I knew that at 4 a.m. they had told me they were going to come in and they were going to check me again. And I was like, I don't want people like up in my business when I got to pee. That's just terribly uncomfortable. So I like woke Jared up and I was like, can you help me go to the bathroom? And so he gets up and he helps me stand up. And I just felt like this like water coming out of me. And I know now that was, you know, my water breaking. I walked to the bathroom and I was like, it's happening right now. And so Jared got the nurse and I sat on the toilet and I just remember being so terrified. Like I'm delivering my baby into the toilet. Like it just like broke my heart to think, cause that's just not what I pictured. I pictured it being more like traditional, like what you see like in a hospital bed kind of thing. But the nurse grabbed one of those, like, guess I think they call them like a hat kind of thing that goes into the toileting so you can collect things. So she put that down and I just sat on the toilet and it was a lot more painful than I anticipated it being. It hadn't really been that painful up until this point. I think partially because I was sleeping for a lot of it or trying to sleep. So anyway, I delivered the baby and I like, when I got up from the toilet, I was like, no, I can't look. Like I was, there's just this terrible, like so torn. Like, do I look, do I not look? But I just like, didn't want that image with like all like the blood in a toilet. Like I just couldn't do that. So anyway, my husband helped me back to the bed and we still had the option at this point. The nurse was going to like clean everything up and kind of make our baby presentable so we could see him if we wanted to. And she told us that he was a boy at this point, which that was what I'd been hoping for the whole time. And so I don't know, it was an odd, like kind of a relief, but also even more heartbreaking to find out that he was a boy. And we made the decision not to see him or to hold him because, like since he'd already had passed about a week prior to that, I just like wanted to maintain this image of like a perfect little baby. I still wonder to this day if that was the, you know, quote unquote, right decision to make, because sometimes I wish that I would have seen him and held him and that kind of thing. But I think it, you know, there is no right or wrong decision in those cases. You just do whatever it is you feel is right in the moment. So anyway, so we didn't see him. I stayed in the hospital the rest of that night and into the next morning. And when, you know, there was no bleeding or any extra issues or whatever, they sent us home and they sent us home with a little like memory box kind of thing. It's this little purple memory box and it had like this little cloth heart thing. It had those little like wristband things they give you at the hospital. So it had one for him in there, a card that all the nurses had signed. And so it was like, you know, we're walking home. We're going home with, you know, an empty womb and empty arms, essentially. But at least we had something to leave the hospital with, which
I didn't realize that was something that was done. I find that to be very that's special in its own way. Like it's very thoughtful.
Right. Yeah. I think it's becoming a more common thing. Okay. I don't know if I've heard of other people having that.
Yeah.
Too. But I don't know that.
Go home like, with something.
Right. Like I know my mom had two miscarriages and one of them was about 15 weeks was her first one. So kind of similar to our situation. And she was in the ER and she had almost 30 years ago. So I guess we've made a little bit of progress in that time as far as how hospitals treat pregnancy loss, which
I think that's largely to thank, you know, to women like you who are sharing your story. Versus everyone just kind of like not sharing. And so in sharing, we can see the impact that this kind of experience has on a woman and that's how change is initiated. So.
Right. Absolutely. So anyway, so we went home and, you know, you recover as much as you can from something like that. I mean, you don't at all, really, let's be honest, but you deal, I guess is maybe a better way of saying that. And I remember like Jared just was, he was like a total zombie for like the next couple of days, like just not himself, quiet. Like he didn't really like cry or anything like that. He just like, he's like a zombie. Like he had no emotions. Whereas I was very much more like all over the place, up and down. And I remember that next week. So his boss at the time was super wonderful and really supportive. And he's actually the one who drove Jared to the hospital to meet me. And he gave Jared like the rest of the week off and gave him delays on all the stuff that they were working on, which was really great. But like, he did end up going back to the work that next week. And I remember thinking like, how can any of this matter? Like we just lost our baby. Like, how can you just like go back to work? Like it's nothing. And, but I mean, you don't really have another choice, but to keep living your life as best as you can. So anyway, that was kind of the situation. Oh, and I probably should say, so when we found out that he was a boy, we'd had a boy name and a girl name picked out already. And so, we decided to name him Ellis Ford, which was the name we picked out for a boy because it just didn't feel right that, you know, we name any other future male child of ours that, because that was his name. And Ford is my husband's middle name. And so it was, you know, it's special that they share that, that middle name. So anyway, that's pretty much the gist of Ellis's story. We started trying pretty quickly again after, because, well, I think even more desperately at that point wanted a baby, and, you know, a baby doesn't replace another baby by any means. But I just really wanted to be pregnant again. I wanted a baby. I felt like it would be healing in some way, to have another baby. And so we got a lot of different answers from different doctors when we were in the hospital and when we had our like follow-up appointment. And basically some people were like, oh, you should wait like 3 months, you should wait 6 months. And then one of the OBs who we saw was like, oh no, as soon as you've had, a period again, like you can go ahead and start trying again. And so that's what we did. We waited. I had one normal cycle and then we started trying again. And I should also mention, when they did all that blood work on me when I was in the hospital, everything came back perfectly normal. The only thing which they didn't even mention at the time, I didn't find this out until after our second loss, was that I came back as heterozygous for one of the MTHFR gene mutations. I can't remember. It's like the C677T, I think it's called. That was the only thing that was like slightly abnormal, but the doctors didn't even mention that. So other than that, everything was fine. They had no answer as to why we miscarried.
Kirsten, did they test Ellis or just you to see?
So they tested, or they tried to test Ellis as well, but they like weren't, you have to like grow the cells to then test the DNA, test the chromosomes, and they weren't able to successfully grow those cells in order to be able to test him. So unfortunately, yeah, we didn't get any answers there, because it would have been really nice to know, yeah, it was just a chromosomal abnormality, like there's nothing you could have done or anything like that, which, you know, we didn't get any kind of answer. And so, yeah. Right. And, you know, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't make it better. But I think maybe it might have helped with some of that like self-blame that you, I think, is really common post-miscarriage, where you're like, what did I do? What could have I done differently? I definitely like was stupid things too. Like, I don't know, we were in Atlanta, I think the weekend before he had passed, and I'm like, oh, I was in that mall and there were all those terrible chemical smells. Like, what if that killed my baby? Or like, I ate so much like mango, the chili mango from Trader Joe's, like I ate like 3 packages of that in like the week that he likely had passed. And I'm like, no, chili mango did not kill my baby. So there's just like, there's, you know, stupid things like that. Like, and they're not stupid, but silly maybe is a better word, that go through your head when you're, you know, in those stages of grief. And I don't know, maybe having some sort of answer would have relieved some of that, but it doesn't change what happened. So we, like I said, we started trying again pretty quickly after, and we got pregnant again quickly. I was on our second try. So it was 3 months after we lost Ellis was when we found out we were pregnant again, which was wonderful. I mean, it was not quite as exciting as the first time, because there was that, you know, underlying fear, like, oh, what if this happens again? But I was trying really, really hard to stay positive. Because I no matter what happened in that pregnancy, I wanted to feel like I'd made the most of every moment I had with that baby inside of me. And so I think to some degree that was helpful, but to the, on the other hand, I think that I, was suppressing what I was feeling to some extent. I was just like ignoring the fact that I was afraid and choosing to be happy instead. So with everything like seemed normal with that pregnancy at first too. Like I felt really nauseous again. I had a lot of morning sickness with both pregnancies. And I was actually more sick the second time around. And I thought, oh, maybe that's a good sign. You know, maybe the sicker I am, the healthier the baby kind of thing. And so we had our first appointment at right about seven weeks again. And it was actually a week before we were moving. So 1 week after this appointment, we were going to be moving to where we live now. And so we were, you know, just, they were hoping, you know, the doctors or the midwife we saw was like, yeah, hopefully we can just like make sure everything's okay. And then we can send you on your way and you can, you know, get your new OB or midwife care, once you move. And so we have our appointment and, we saw our baby, our little teeny tiny baby. And this baby was not developing, the way that, so we weren't as far along as we should have been based on when my, last menstrual cycle was. We, like I said, we should have been at about 7 weeks and the baby was measuring closer to six or six and a half. And there was a heartbeat, but it was really, really slow. Like you couldn't hear it, but you could see it on the ultrasound. And so they, you know, they told us at that point, like, you know, it's possible that you're just behind where we, where you thought you were timing wise. And, you know, it's not that abnormal for there not be to be a strong heartbeat at this point, because it, the heart has literally just started beating shortly before. But they wanted us to come back in, the next week for another ultrasound. And so, we left the doctor's office, and I remember walking back to our car and just like breaking down, like once we got into our car, because I was like, you know, after all we've been through, I just wanted this to be easy. Like, why does it have to be so hard again? Like, why do we have to have these questions and these unknowns? Like, is our baby okay? Is our baby not okay? And this was a Friday. So we had all weekend to just kind of sit and wonder what was going on with our baby. And the next Monday, the following Monday, we had our follow-up appointment, and they had tested my HCG levels and they had risen, but they had not risen as much as they should have, as much as they were supposed to in that amount of time. And when they did the ultrasound, they couldn't find a heartbeat anymore. So that was when we found out we were losing our second baby, which again was, it was weird because, I mean, we had kind of been prepared for it because we already knew that things weren't, you know, the way they were technically supposed to be. And we also had gone through this before. And it doesn't make it easier, or okay, but I think we like knew how to handle it a little bit better. And like I said, we were also moving. Like this was Monday, we were moving on Friday. So we had a lot of other things to worry about the next day. The movers were coming to pack up our house, and, you know, we had to, all the cleaning to do and the last minute packing to do and all this kind of stuff. And so that served as a kind of welcome distraction at that time. And so when we were at the hospital for that, or the office for the last appointment with the ultrasound, they told us kind of our options as far as how to proceed. You know, we could have a DNC, we could like be in with medicine, or we could just kind of wait, what they call expectant management, I think is the term. And even though like I was with how things went with Ellis, with like kind of immediately dealing with it and delivering him right away in the hospital, like I was really grateful for how that went. But this time around, like I wanted to let my body kind of release the pregnancy on its own, was what I had decided. And so, especially since we were moving, like it just was so, it would have been so complicated trying to fit all these things in this last week. So we were waiting for my body to kind of figure it out. And so we moved, we were, you know, started moving into our new house. A couple of weeks passed and there was nothing, no bleeding, no cramping, like no sign at all. I still totally felt pregnant. I was dizzy and nauseous and all that kind of stuff. And so I made an appointment with the OBs on post here, and I went in and they did another ultrasound. And I remember the OB I saw here, I guess, like she said, she had seen the report from our previous ultrasound, but like not all of it apparently, because she said something, cause they'd also tested my HCG levels again. And she said something along the line about how like my HCG levels were still rising, so maybe there was hope or something like that. I remember her saying that. And like in that split second, it was like, oh, maybe. But then I was like, no, like my baby doesn't have a heartbeat. And so it was almost like harder that she's, I think she was just trying to be nice, but it was like even harder to hear that. when I knew at this point that there was no hope. So anyway, she did the ultrasound, and at this point, there was basically just like an empty, like, amniotic sac. So the baby itself, like all the genetic material and tissue, all that, I guess it kind of dissolves. I don't know the proper medical terms, but essentially it looked like we had like an empty sac on the ultrasound. It was just like a big round ball is what you could see. So again, like she kind of gave me the option to have to be induced with Cytotec again, or to kind of wait. And at this point, like it had, you know, we'd been waiting, I think it was like 2.5-3 weeks at this point. And I just like, I needed to move on. Like I just needed to deliver the baby, have the pregnancy be over and to move on. Cause it was just, it's very wearing emotionally to know that you have a baby inside of you that is no longer living. So they gave me the medication, and when I was in the hospital, I ended up having like 2 doses, that were applied vaginally. And this time they gave me just like one, it was literally, I think one or two pills. I took one time orally, and it basically did nothing. I think it was within maybe 12 hours or so of taking the pill, I, had a little bit of cramping and a tiny bit of spotting, like very, like not even as much as you'd probably experience with a normal period. And 24 hours roughly after that started, it stopped. Like there was nothing. Like, so I called the hospital again, trying to get in touch with the doctor to see if I could get another dose of medication. And, this is one bad thing about military hospitals in my experience, or military clinics in general, is it's very hard to get a hold of people. So I don't know if that's the case for like other offices, but that's definitely the case. One of the negative things with the military system. And so it took forever for me to even be able to talk to the doctor. And I think my doctor wasn't even in that day. And so they like got me in touch with one of the other providers, and they wouldn't give me more medication without seeing me first. And they couldn't get me in for an appointment that day. So this again was a Friday. So we would have had to wait until like the next week to get more medication. And so basically our options were to wait or to go to the ER. And I did not want to go to the ER. So we waited again, and it actually ended up that it was about a week after I initially took the medication that my body finally was like, okay, this is happening. So it was about a month, almost exactly a month after we found out that our baby didn't have a heartbeat, that my body like finally started like on its own cramping and spotting and bleeding. So that started, I think it was on like a Sunday or a Monday. And I think it was Wednesday was when I actually like passed the baby. And again, I was by myself. My husband was at work. And it was more, I thought it would be easier than Ellis's delivery because this baby was even smaller. It was not easier. It was actually either it was legitimately more painful, or I just remembered Ellis's delivery with, as being easier than it actually was. So I was having really bad cramps and like horrible contractions, really bad contractions. And I mean, I can't compare that to a delivery of a full-term baby, but I don't know. It gave me a lot more appreciation for what women are able to do in delivering their children. And so anyway, I called my husband because the pain started getting really bad. And so he was able to leave work early, but we live about 45 minutes from his work. So by the time he got home, it was actually like right after I hung up the phone with him, I like felt something come out of me, like more than just blood. Like, and I just could like kind of feel it. And I went to the bathroom, and it was the amniotic sac is what I could see. And I remember like catching it, because I like figured that's what it was, that was what I could feel. And so I remember grabbing it and looking it in my hand, and then immediately dropping it into the toilet. And then I was like, what the heck did I just do? I can't just like drop that in the toilet. So I reached my hand in the toilet and grabbed it back out. I can't really explain like my mental state during this whole experience. It's just a little bit surreal and something obviously you never expect you're gonna have to go through. But anyway, so, I was holding the amniotic sac and just like, in such awe and wonder at the fact that this is what held my baby, and almost getting a glimpse into the future of when we hopefully do have another baby, I can picture while that baby's still inside of me, what its home looks like, because I've seen what it looks like on the outside. And so obviously it's not an easy thing to experience, but I'm very grateful for that, to have been able to hold the thing that once held my baby. So I just didn't really know what to do with it. So I think I grabbed one of my super maxi pads that I bought when I knew I was going to be miscarrying, and placed it on the pad so I could figure out what to do with it and if my husband wanted to see it once he got home and that kind of thing. So anyway, I kept having contractions after that, but they started lessening after I passed the amniotic sac, and my husband came home and he tried to comfort me as much as you can and feed me, because I hadn't eaten anything all day. And the only thing I wanted was tomato soup, which is a little bit ironic because it looks like blood. But again, you do weird things when weird things are happening in your body that you never could have prepared yourself for. So anyway, that was kind of what happened with that. We ended up naming that baby Baby P, is what we refer to that baby as, because we don't know whether it was a girl or a boy. And then, you have those pregnancy apps or whatever that tell you what your fruit or vegetable your baby is the size of that week. And the week, the size that Baby P was when they stopped developing was a P, and our last name is Peterson. So it just kind of seemed fitting. And what I did end up doing with that amniotic sac, I think I just shared this a few days ago on Instagram, is I bought a aloe plant and buried the amniotic sac in the aloe plant. Because we're an army family, we move all the time. I can't plant something in my yard and then expect to be able to come back and, have it still be there kind of thing, because we're just going to move. So I figure that this plant, I can carry it around with me. Which is nice. So now it's my special little plant, and it's nice to have something especially something living that reminds me of that baby. Cause I don't really have that with Ellis. I have the stuff that we got, from the hospital and that kind of thing. But the hospital keeps the body, or at least, there was no other option presented to us. And so I didn't have anything of him really. And so it was nice with this one, even though it's kind of, an abstract thing, it's a plant, but it's something. So that's,
I'm looking at that post right now. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant.
Thank you.
I think that's a very cool idea. There's magic in that for sure.
And I don't want to interrupt your honor roll, but, I had a very similar experience with my miscarriage. Your baby P kind of went very much like mine did. Miscarrying, it was really painful. I just want to I feel you on that. And I had already given birth to Bear, with no medication or anything like that. And it was really, really painful experience. And I also got to see, I guess at that point, it wasn't it was a sack, just like what you're describing. Yeah. This is happening, and basically just tied to the toilet and wipe and look down. I'm like, oh my God, that's my baby. I did not have the forethought to make plans for it. I wish I had. I mean, that's a reminder to have that plant for, the baby. But, I just want to let you know, I view it as a gift. I don't know. Yeah. I kind of feel like you view it that way too. But some people might be like, ooh, that's weird or whatever. Right. But for me to be able to just see and hold what was my baby was very precious to me.
I totally agree. And I will say, I did not have forethought with the knowing what to do with the amniotic sac. It did, oddly enough, sit in my fridge for a little over 24 hours. I think it was the next day we went out and bought the plant. And it's just, I don't know, kind of a weird thing to think that there's an amniotic sac in our fridge. Miscarriage is weird, man. It's just really weird.
It is. It kind of, I mean, and what you're saying, I definitely don't want to interrupt, and this is your story, but just want to give you some solidarity. Everything that you're saying that you're feeling
you know, it's just like, I feeling it with you, but also I get it. I understand. And, you're not alone. And yeah, I'm so grateful for you sharing this story, because I feel like so many women who are listening are just going to be, I don't know, they're going to be right there with you, and they're going to be feeling all the feelings. And I hope this gives them permission to share if that's what, something that's going to bring them, like, not necessarily closure, but healing, I guess, from that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like I always say, like, I hate that anyone has to, like, you know, get what I'm going through, who, like, has been through a similar experience. But at the same time, it's so wonderful knowing that you're not the only one who's going through what you've been through, because that's the statistic. I think it's like 1 in 4 women has a miscarriage. So it's a lot of people who can kind of relate to, you know, maybe not the exact same experience and whatnot, but something similar. So, yeah.
And everyone processes it differently too. It's like, I have friends who, but then you never really know the full story. You never really know, like, the pain or the struggle that they're going through in private. But
yeah,
I have friends who have had miscarriages, and on the outside, or even when talking to them, they, you know, it was a struggle. Obviously it was painful, but they have, I guess, really healed, and moved forward. And then I have friends, and myself included, where it took longer, you know, and, I still, not saying that those people still don't struggle with it, but, you know, it's like, you never really know anybody's story or how deeply they've been wounded, or, you know, even if they appear okay, quote unquote, on the outside, you know, how they're really feeling on the inside. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really, really, really hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone experiences these things so differently. And, like, you know, husbands and wives too. Like, my husband dealt with things very differently than I did. And I've heard the same thing from other friends, who've gone through miscarriage or, you know, other, similar issues. And, like, you know, their spouse just processes things differently than they do. And sometimes even that can feel alone, 'cause it's like, no, like, you're supposed to be in this with me. Like, this is our baby. Like, why are you okay? But, you know, it's just, I think whether it's your spouse or your friend or your family member, whoever, the stranger on the street, like, everybody experiences these things so differently. And just, you know, we need to be loving and accepting of however people feel about whatever it is that they're going through.
I feel like that's such a good point, because, it, you know, like, not projecting how you expect someone to feel on them. Like, it's okay to process. I have a number of friends who've gone through miscarriage. My mom went through a few, and, you know, you kind of, I guess there was a time in my life where I expected there to be specific emotions around it. And I think it's super important. I think that's very, that's incredible advice or incredible wisdom to impart. It's just like, women will all process it differently. Their husbands will process it differently. And that is 100% okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was like, so I've been going to, I went and saw a therapist after we lost Ellis. And then I've been seeing a different one since we moved here. I think I started seeing her, oh, it was like right after Ellis's due date, actually. So it was about a month or so after, my miscarriage with baby P. And, like, that's something that we've covered a lot, is just like being okay with, like, however you're dealing with things, whatever you're feeling, and, like, just accepting what that is and not judging yourself. And I think that's so important, that it's like, not only do we need to not kind of put our expectations on other people or judge other people for what it is that they're feeling and how they're dealing with things, but also giving ourselves the same grace to just, like, deal with it however we need to deal with it and whatever time we need to deal with it in, and just with a lot of love.
Yeah, and I know you've shared a lot about how, like, every day is different, or even hours mm-hmm. within a day can be different, and that's also okay. Like, it's okay to be happy again, and it's okay to
right.
then, like, 2 hours later feel sad again, and to have those emotions ebb and flow. And so I think there's a lot of power in you sharing that as well, because I think that gives, not that they need it, but I think it gives women who might be following along permission to feel all the feelings and to be okay with being happy again and to be okay with, you know, going, having the ups and downs. I think that's really incredible that you share that, because I think there's a lot of power in that, being able to feel all the things.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not fun. Like, I'm somebody who, I used to always take such pride in the fact that I, like, never cried, and that I just thought that was, like, a sign of being like emotionally strong, like, oh, I'm so tough because I don't cry, whatever. I cry all the flipping time now, all the time. And you know what? It's kind of wonderful. Because I don't know, I just see where I used to see crying and feeling like being emotional as like a sign of weakness. Like now I understand that it's such a sign of strength to be able to feel your emotions and process them in the way that you need to. And, you know, when you cry, like I'm sure a lot of people can, attest to this, the fact that like you, once you let all those tears out, like you usually feel better. Like there's just like a huge relief that comes from just letting it all out. So like I was talking to one of my friends last week and I was having a rough day, one of those rough days, and I full on sobbed in my shower, like ugly, ugly cry, ugly noises coming out of my mouth, tears running down my face. And then I was able to just like go out the rest of my day and I was okay because I'd let all the emotions out.
That's so awesome. Jess and I talk a lot about therapy on this podcast. We both have, I've gone and seen a therapist for like 3-4 years, and there's so much power in feeling your feelings versus, yep, you know, trying to hide them or avoid them, feeling them and being super present with them and letting them just like wave over you. And just, you know, I think that there's a magic to that. And it's that, that's been a huge part of my story too. And I think it's awesome that you're sharing about that too, because, there's, like I said, there's a power in feeling feelings and there's a power in crying. And we've talked about this actually too, that there's actual stress hormones that are released in tears. And so in right. crying, you are legitimately like biologically getting rid of stress from the body, which is right. incredible too.
I try to tell my husband that because he's like a stress prone. And I mean, his job is very stressful, but he doesn't really feel his emotions very well. I don't think, you know, since I'm an expert, not at all. But I told him that you just need to cry. You'll feel so much better. He doesn't though. He doesn't listen to me.
Well, and so I know you've recently shared on social media too about, you had been sharing a lot about the miscarriages, and then you kind of recently opened up a little bit more about your conception journey and like the, now that you're in a path of trying to conceive again. Is there anything you want to share about that at this point, in the stage that you're at and kind of where you are in regards to this next phase?
Yeah, sure. So basically what happened after our second miscarriage is we took a little break, not a long break, it was a couple months. I just kind of got to a place where I was like trying to have a baby and like just dealing with our losses was just consuming me. It was all I could think about. It was all I talked about. And I just like, as much as like, I think that's totally understandable. Like I didn't want my entire life to be about trying to have a baby. Like I wanted to be able to still live and be, you know, happy to some degree. And so we decided to take a little break. And we started trying again, I think it was November. So it's been a few months now. And when both times when we had gotten pregnant before, that's what would happen again. And it wasn't. And it's, you know, we haven't been trying for long. Like I said, I think this cycle would be like our fourth try. And that is far, far less than so many people, you know, as far as like how long that they have conceived or been trying to conceive. And I absolutely don't want to minimize that at all. But I will say that like when you've had a loss, especially I think after two losses, there's just, I don't know, it just feels that much more intense, like all the feelings around it. It feels like there's just that much more pressure to make it happen. Like, I guess I would say I feel desperate, I think, every month to try to make it happen is how it feels just after already losing two babies. And, you know, it was our plan, we know what was quote unquote supposed to happen was we were going to have a baby this last October. And, you know, we're almost into February now, and I'm not pregnant. And so it's like we've been delayed by all these things. And so there's just, I don't know, it just feels like there's this extra level of pressure to get pregnant again. And that's hard, especially when like everyone always talks about how like, oh, once you stop stressing about it, once you stop worrying about it so much, that's when you'll have, that's like when it'll happen. But my therapist and I have talked about this like all the time about how that's the worst thing you can tell a woman who's trying to conceive, because you can't just, like, if there's something you want that badly, you can't just turn that off. You can't just magically stop stressing about it. So that's kind of where we're at right now, trying to conceive and trying not to stress about it, if that's possible. And I think that too, what's been a struggle for me this time around as we've been trying, is that, you know, after one loss, it's kind of still relatively easy to believe that, oh, you know, it was just a chromosomal abnormality. We just got unlucky. Like, there's nothing wrong with us. We're okay. And then you have that second loss and it's like, okay, it's a little harder to believe that we just got unlucky twice. Maybe there's something wrong, but maybe not. But it's like you had that plus, like, you know, not getting pregnant right away when we did before. I can't help but wonder what is different now than before. And so that's something that I'm struggling with currently, is kind of stressing about, like, is there something wrong with me? And I don't know. I don't know. I don't think there is. I actually had a pelvic ultrasound this morning, and everything was fine. I was told I have a beautiful uterus.
Nice. There you go.
so that's good to hear.
Yeah.
So as far as we know right now, like, my thyroid is, my thyroid levels are good. Like, my hormone levels that have been tested are good. My uterus and my ovaries all look healthy. Like, everything looks good. And so kind of what I'm telling myself now is that, my body knows what it's doing, and maybe this time around, it just needed extra time to heal from these two pregnancies, because it's a lot to go through physically, as well as emotionally, obviously. And so I'm just trying to trust that my body knows what it's doing, and that when the time is right, that it'll happen, and that maybe that hasn't happened yet, in order to prevent another loss. And for that, I'm definitely grateful. So that's where we're at right now.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And for, you know, for a lot of people, it's easier to share things, like, once you're through the thick of it. But I think that it's incredibly powerful for you to come on and share your story when you're in it, and, your grace and willingness to share and your headspace with all of this is very inspiring to me. So thank you for that.
Thank
Do you have
you.
Any other thoughts, anything you want to share about the process, or, you know, anything, I guess, any last thoughts in terms of your story so far?
I guess I would just like to say that if this is something that you are going through or have gone through, or something you will go through in the future, that, like, you know, obviously everyone deals with things differently and not everyone feels the need to share. But if you feel like it would be helpful for you to share, whether that is just with your mom or a friend, or if it is, like, on social media or a blog, like what I've done, like, do it. Like, don't feel like you shouldn't share because of this, like, stigma that's out there that, oh, you know, we don't talk about this, we don't share about this. So, and if you don't feel the need to share, then don't share. Like, do whatever it is you need to do to deal as best as you can.
I like that. I think maybe sometimes women they feel a sense of guilt, or like someone will judge them, or, you know, those kinds of feelings from friends I've spoken to, or like, I don't want to tell anyone I'm pregnant because if I lose it, then what do people think of me? And so much of that falls on the mom. And I,
absolutely,
you know, and that's a tough way to, not only are you dealing with loss, but then you have feelings of guilt and of, like, what could I have done differently? And it's just, I think speaking about it could potentially help with processing those feelings of, like, it's not my fault. Like, this happens.
Right.
And I think the more you have an inner dialogue, sometimes it can, like, spiral into maybe a little bit harder and harder and harder. But when you say things aloud and you get feedback, it can be pretty awesome in terms of healing. So, and I obviously
definitely
can't speak to the experience, and I can only imagine how hard, but I can speak to speaking about things that are hard and,
yes,
and how it can be so healing. So I love that you say that.
Yeah. And also I will say, for me, when I finally opened up about it and, like, told friends and family and, like, even coworkers, it was amazing how many women were like, yeah, that happened to me too. I had,
right,
a miscarriage between so-and-so, or, you know, much more. Whereas, like, if I was in a room with five other women, it was like 4 out of 5 of them were all saying, that happened to me too. So I know the statistic, like you said, it's like 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 4. Okay. I feel like it's more than that. You know what I mean? Just because sometimes people don't report it, or maybe they don't think that it's a miscarriage, maybe because it's super early, or maybe they just had a heavy period, or there's just a lot of like unknown about it. But I don't know. Just, and that opened up the opportunity for me to connect with a lot of other women on that level that, you know, maybe I was close with, but not like, obviously not close enough for them to tell me that that had happened. Like they had to or anything, but, you know, we opened up those lines of communication, and it's just a beautiful, it was for me a beautiful opportunity to connect to other women.
Yeah, that's definitely been my experience as well. And I think like the more that, you know, people like women talk about these things, and the more we realize that this is something that happens to a lot of women, the more I think that we'll kind of realize that, like, you know, if you go through a miscarriage, that does not mean that you're broken. It does not mean that there's something wrong with your body. Like, it's just unfortunately something that happens. And I don't know, hopefully one day they'll have like some magical test that can, like, you know, make it so it doesn't happen. I don't know. But for the time being, it's unfortunately something that's entirely common. And it does not mean that you're broken if it happens to you.
Yeah, that's incredible words.
Absolutely.
I have pulled up some really incredible blog posts from you. This Side of Heaven is the story of Alice's, Alice's story. And then Please God Not Again is Baby P. And then also a really awesome post that you wrote called I Am a Mom. And so, or Am I a Mom, excuse me. So I'm excited to, I'll share those, link to those in our show notes as well. So if you guys want to read more, and then you can also follow Kirsten on Instagram, and you're incredibly vocal there, and you do a lot of sharing, and it's really, I get goosebumps like daily. So we'll link to your Instagram as well.
Yeah. Awesome. It seems like such an extra effort to like write a blog post than it does to write an Instagram post, even though it's, I don't know, it's a little different. But so yeah, most of what I share goes on Instagram because I'm just too lazy most of the time to actually put it into a blog post.
And plus it's like in the moment, like I have all these feelings and I can just say it and it'll take like the minute or 2 minutes to say it versus like processing it and then writing it and then editing it and then rereading it. And then sometimes it's nice just to get it out. I love stories for that reason.
Yeah. I have big hopes to like take some of the things that I've written on Instagram and like organize them into like coherent blog posts, but who knows when that'll happen.
Well, yeah, even your posts are really awesome. So I have notes to link to some of those posts too, because they're really great. And do you take all your photos?
Yes.
Wow. They're awesome. Really good.
Thank you.
Well, do you have any last thoughts from either of you? This has been really awesome. I'm so excited to put this out into the world and to share your stories with our listeners.
Yeah, that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share my detailed stories and get some of my feelings out and because sharing it, I don't know. That's definitely been that sharing has been so helpful in just my healing journey.
Awesome. So where can people get in touch with you?
So like we said, on Instagram is where I'm most active. It's at Vibrant Life Army Wife. And then my blog as well is vibrantlifearmywife.com. I do have a Facebook page, but Facebook is so silly these days. I just really don't do anything there. So Instagram and the blog.
I was thinking about writing a Facebook post like, hey guys, I'm out. Find me on Instagram because I just
I've been thinking about that as well.
Except for our modern, we have our Modern Mamas Tribe on like a Facebook group. So I have my personal account. Yeah. That's pretty much all I do. But then like my actual Radical Roots page, I just never post on anymore. So
yeah, that's same.
Pretty standard.
And I do Facebook for my job. So it's I don't really want to do it for fun.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you so much for coming on. That really means a lot. It was really nice chatting with you too. This has been fun getting to know you better because we were like social media friends. So now I feel like we can say we're real life friends even more.
Definitely.
So you guys find Kirsten in her Instagram, her website. You can find us at I'm Laura.RadicalRoots. Jess is Jess.HoldTheSpace. You can always email us with topic suggestions or feedback or whatever at modernmamaspodcast@gmail.com. Please subscribe, rate, leave a review. We're so glad to have you here, and we hope you have a great week. Thanks so much, guys.
Hey guys, Jess here. Just wanted to give you the heads up on a great deal that we don't want you to miss out on. Laura and I have recently teamed up with our friends at ButcherBox to bring you an amazing offer on premium grass-fed, hormone, and antibiotic-free meats delivered right to your door. We've absolutely been loving the opportunity to put together our own custom boxes of the highest quality beef, pork, and chicken. And we definitely don't want you guys to miss out on the chance to try it too. Right now, if you visit butcherbox.com/modernmamas, you get the chance to get $10 off of your first box, plus 2 free 10-ounce grass-fed ribeyes. You definitely don't want to miss out on this deal, friends, so get on it.